Welcome to Intersection Live, the tax and accounting profession's premier podcast source, provided by the CPA Technology Advisor, supporting the accountant community. This is Tech to Go, a monthly fast-paced roundtable discussion with executive editor Darren Root and regular columnists of the CPA Technology Advisor. These thought leaders tackle current technology issues impacting the tax and accounting profession.
This is Darren Root, executive editor of the CPA Technology Advisor, and you are listening to episode 46 of Tech to Go. I have today two of my regular co-hosts. Renee Lassert couldn't be with us, but I have Randy Johnston, who's a principal at K2 and also with Network Management Group, Inc. Welcome today, Randy.
Thank you very much, and welcome to all our listeners.
And I also have our other regular co-host, which is Dave McClure, president of the U.S. Internet Industry Association. So welcome today, Dave.
Thank you. It's a beautiful day here in the Shenandoah Valley.
Well, I hear cold weather is moving our way. Supposed to be blowing through the Midwest tomorrow, so Randy, you're probably going to experience it just before I get it.
I was going to say it's already here.
It was a gorgeous day yesterday, but
not so good now. In fact, Darren, as we were talking beforehand, that was an even better day with this, the arrival of second grandchild for me.
Congratulations! So, what did you end up with?
Second girl. So very
two girls.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Another thing that I think, Randy, I didn't tell you I was going to mention, but, you know, I saw Network Management Group, Inc. Displaying at some conferences lately. Tell Dave and I just a little bit about what you guys are doing there.
No, I appreciate that. As you know, Darren, one of the frustrations we had was businesses around the country not really doing a very good job of implementing in CPA firms. So earlier this year, we made the proactive decision to do national support on CPA firms. And because of that, I actually contracted and became an exhibitor at both the CCH conference as well as the SLEDR conference to let people talk to some of the staff from NMGI, whether it was about backup services or encrypted email or many of the other things that we've done. So not only did you get to see me, but about a half a dozen of my other people have been out on the road with me for these conferences.
Oh, that's great. Well, I can attest to what a great job you guys do. I was one of those frustrated accounting firms that just couldn't seem to get my technology completely right, and you guys did a phenomenal job of helping us accomplish that and continue to support us.
I appreciate that very much. The guys here, I'm very pleased to be around. I learn something from them every day, including this morning's meeting.
Yeah, you've got some smart ones. Well, Randy, I want to kind of kick off today with you. There's some new things that are kind of hitting the tech market that we've kind of talked a little bit about, some video streaming, you know, what's going on with Google TV, different things like that. Give our listeners just kind of an overview of kind of some of the things that are happening right now.
Well, this technology and the delivery of video to the desktop is starting to mature. You know, Dave will be able to give us some additional insights on this too, but of interest was the receipt on Saturday of my Boxy box. Basically, Linksys had contracted with the Boxy software folks to create a single appliance that you could install and stream video from any source inside your four walls. In other words, if you had your own DVDs, Blu-rays, or MP4 files on servers in your home, or from any of the popular media sites, including the pay-for services like Netflix or the free services that are out there. So in effect, this one box winds up with a remote control, a single power connection, an HDMI out, and an Ethernet connection. You have one control unit to access any video. The retail price of the product was set at $219. The initial sales are being done at $199, one-time fee. So I'm looking at it saying, I have used satellite, and yeah, I've used DirecTV, and yeah, I've used cable TV and so forth, but this seems like a pretty good alternative. Clearly, Google has introduced their own appliance to do a similar type of thing with Google TV. And actually, Apple has done a pretty nice little job with updating their version of streaming video. So one of the things I wanted our listeners to keep their eyes open for was new developments in these video streaming techniques, which I think will influence the way we get some of our training in the future, as well as the way we actually do our own pleasure viewing.
Dave, do you know much about what's going on in this space?
Yeah, I do, and it's interesting because, first of all, I agree with Randy entirely. I think this is technology that's starting to mature and find some value in terms of what we're able to do with it, particularly from a business standpoint. The weak link is still, and I know, Randy, you mentioned you've been through the satellite services and through the cable services, but the problem with these streaming devices to date is that they rely either on content that you already have or content that streams from the internet. And the weak link in all of that is your internet connection. And we're seeing that with video delivery. I saw today that Netflix is increasing its streaming capabilities and the content available online for a higher price, of course. The problem is still, if you don't have a very fast link, and maybe even if you do, because you'll be throttled back by your ISP for using too much, how do you get the content down so you can stream it to your television or your other device? And I think we're trying to address that with the stimulus programs for broadband because they're all middle-mile fiber projects. We're trying to get fiber out as best we can, everywhere we can. But that's going to remain for many years a weak link. If you don't have a good internet connection, you're going to find yourself with some difficulties getting streaming content down to your box.
Yeah, in fact, this whole internet reliability issue is something we've talked about for years together, but I'm concerned about it for business purposes as well as home purposes. And when I think about the upcoming CES, one of the new forums or special pavilions that they're going to have is for femtocells. I think we've talked about femtocells before, but those are devices that become substitute cellular stations in your homes or businesses. And what we're really trying to do there is cover up, you know, cellular coverage via the internet. And of course, we've talked, I know, several times about, you know, how do we handle internet bandwidth? You know, should it be measured? Should it be, you know, what's the story there? And I know, Dave, you know more about that than I do.
Well, actually, you know, we talked about femtocells before, and Darren, I think we ought to put that down maybe for our next conversation because now that all the major carriers have them, it's worth discussing some of their value and some of their limitations. But, yeah, I think that's one way to go. Again, 3G cellular is not a great platform for the internet. It's really based on the ability to get a little bit of content to a cell phone. And I know the ads show people streaming movies and TV shows to their phones, but, boy, I'd be hard-pressed to make that work in the real world.
Mm-hmm. I'll tell you, I was in an airplane somewhere, like you were, Randy, last week or the week before, and I decided, you know, I had Wi-Fi on the plane, and I decided I was just going to go ahead and stream something to my my iPad on the plane. And I was actually using my Netflix account, and it just didn't work. I mean, I don't know why it didn't work. It just took so long for it to begin, even beginning to stream, that it just wasn't functional. So I guess that's probably a part of this problem, right?
It really is, but I think about the different users around the country because I had the privilege of speaking in Honolulu last Monday and Tuesday, and the local people there were telling me in Oahu, in Honolulu itself, that they were routinely getting between 15 and 80 megabits measured. One person over lunch said that he'd measured his at 57 megabits for much less than $50. Well, you know, you start thinking about that type of high performance, that's
sure.
Good. But back from the islands to the mainland, they still had performance problems crossing the Pacific. So, you know, we've got several issues that we're going to have to be able to resolve, which I think is going to keep us from getting to the cloud as soon as I'd like or having the reliability that we need to be able to get to the cloud to me, this plumbing of the internet is a real stumbling block to some of these innovations at this point.
So Randy, you mentioned these different, the boxy box that you got, and Google TV and Apple TV. You know, at home I have, I just put a little Apple server, Mac Mini server in my home, and I kind of stream my Netflix through there, and I can store things on there and play them, all that kind of stuff. And are we just accomplishing the same thing, except at a more cost-effective price with these devices?
Right now, I think that is a good view of it. I have multiple employees here at NMGI that have done that same Mac Mini thing. And really, to me, the Boxy box, of course, I like the Boxy software to start with, and I'd run the Boxy software on my MacBook Pro as well as a Windows PC. But I needed a device that was inexpensive, that was on full time, and could easily make the connection up to the TV, and that's really what the Boxy box has turned out to be.
So do you see throwing this in your conference room as a business, connecting it maybe to, you know, your flat panel monitor that's on the wall, you know, whatever, a 60-inch, and doing some training, streaming some training through there? Is that a value prop for that?
I fully expect that to be where it heads next, and it is possible right now. So that is one of the plans that I have. Again, I'll do the testing before our next call. Had actually hoped to do it over the weekend, but, daughter and new granddaughter had other plans on that one.
Completely understand.
Yep. So we'll have to do that one before our next call. But, yes, I see it as a real viable business tool. And I believe publishers, just like CCH, had videoed so much of their activity at their conference. I think Thompson's done the same thing. And, of course, their goal is that post-conference that you'd actually watch the video stream. I think that's a very viable delivery mechanism for a lot of business events like that.
Sure.
I would have to add the words in the future, because right now I've been to many conferences where the effort has been made to stream content live. And there are just so many technical hurdles. You, and again, I'll circle back and come to the solution for it. But right now, the biggest problem is, if you're going to do streamed content and you plan to use it at a specific time and place, you're better off downloading it overnight and then streaming it from a local server, not trying to stream it across the internet, unless you are willing to pay for a fairly expensive connection to do that with. Now, the solution is taking much of that content off the internet in what's called a content delivery network. And they exist today, that there are more than a dozen of them. Akamai is probably the most famous, but there are a number of them and more on the way that simply take that content off the commercial internet and out of the loop. And they can stream it to a server local to you, so that when you actually stream it, you're not streaming it from California. You're streaming it from a place 50 miles away on a better circuit. And I think that's going to be the next interim step rather than going full live.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Well, guys, with the time that we have today, I want to move on to maybe a different topic. Randy, we'll wrap up with conferences towards the end that we attended towards the last few weeks, but I'm going to pivot to Dave a moment. And Dave, before we went live today, you mentioned this idea of distribution media. Can you explain kind of what you were talking about?
Sure. I mean, I do, as you know, some software reviews, and one of the more recent reviews I did was for Sage Software. And to my interest and amazement, the software came on a thumb drive, a 1 gig thumb drive. So I looked at that and I blogged about the fact that we seem to be moving beyond the 1985 technology of CD-ROMs towards something a little better. And I got feedback on the blog from people who were saying, yeah, but even that's obsolete. Why should we even have to carry a thumb? And while I understand their point, I'm not sure that we're quite ready to just download everything. And I'll give you a good example of why not. What happens when you're sitting somewhere out in the field and your hard drive crashes and you can replace the hard drive? What do you do about your software? You may or may not be able to get to the internet. You may or may not if you've had a crash, if you don't have a backup handy, you may not be able to restore all the passwords and usernames it takes to get back online to get your software. So the question becomes, what is the best distribution media for applications?
Yeah, I guess in that same example, though, Dave, you probably aren't going to carry all these CDs, I guess, thumb drives, whatever, with you in that same situation. So they may be sitting back in your desk in your office. So you're still sort of in the same position.
So what's a good solution, Randy?
It's a wonderful question. I'm listening to you guys thinking, wonder what the solution is this.
Well, you know, I'll tell you, Randy, we brought this up, I think, once before you and I were talking about this. I don't remember if it was you and I or Doug Sleater and myself. But, you know, I was amazed when I got this box in the mail from Intuit this year that, wow, every year they ship out all these CDs all over the country. What a cost that has to be. Not only postage, but production and packaging and everything else. That can't be it.
Mm-hmm. No, it can't be. And like I said, that's 1985 technology. Surely in the past, you know, 25 years, we've managed to move beyond that. My question is, what have we moved to, or what should we be moving to?
Yeah. Well, it's also pretty clear, because Dr. Bob and I have concluded we're no longer going to recommend having DVDs or Blu-rays in most equipment. You know, if you have such a need, great. But whereas before that was just standard must-have, mm-hmm. we're actually taking that off the recommended list.
Oh, wow. That's big news.
It really is a pretty big shift, because we were conservative about taking it off, but we think the day of the DVD and Blu-ray is pretty much gone. And where's it going? Well, right now it has temporarily gone to these larger USB sticks, in many cases USB 3.0s right now at 32 gig are doing a nice job. But I think the answer is the streaming from the Internet. And, you know, if that means, Dave, is your suggested model, which is going to come of more age, this content distribution, whether it's downloaded in the off hours to your own local servers, and then it comes off your local servers, maybe that's the way. But I know in our own business here at NMGI, we have nothing that we keep on DVD. We download the ISO images from Microsoft or Adobe or whatever. And so we basically have all the software that is installed pretty much for all clients in magnetic formula or magnetic format on these big drives. So if we need to reinstall Windows Server 2008, it comes from a downloaded ISO image, and we've never touched a DVD or a Blu-ray of it.
Yeah.
Now, here's the other problem with that, Randy. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on you there. Here's the other problem with it. If you try to move to USB, most machines now come only with USB 2.0, and USB 3.0 is already out. You're just seeing machines upgrading to that. So you may have a compatibility issue as you had going from 2.0 up to 2.0 from 1.0. And I've also noticed if you're using SD cards, which now have amazing capacity, but most of the USB card readers do not have the capacity to read the big cards.
That's right. It's not unusual that you can only read up to, let's say, a 2-gig card, and there's
right.
obviously 4s and 8s and 32s, and then the speed of the SD cards are also a factor, because there's slow SD cards, and there's high speed and ultra high speed and extreme
right.
high speed. So, you know, you've got a problem with the speed of the readers and the cards.
And it's no help going online to try to find a replacement or try to find a third party that you can stick in, because I've been searching. I'm looking for a new machine right now. So I've been searching for those units. They're not available in the marketplace, at least nowhere that you can find easily. So it's a real quandary how we're going to handle that. And it could well be that the answer will be having them online somewhere, but that gets us back to the internet download problem, which is, what happens if you don't have a high-speed connection at wherever you're stuck at trying to download? Or what happens if it's interrupted? Some of the software these days is running up to a gig, and that's a lot of downloads.
You know, I guess, you know, my take in my practice is kind of like yours, Randy. I just soon have all this stuff on my servers. the ISO files, and just download it, not have CDs in my drawers and not have DVD players and not get thumb drives, that sort of stuff. But maybe the one step that I did not take in my thinking was maybe I want to also, put that in a Dropbox sort of folder, Randy, and let it synchronize on up to Dropbox so I have access, outside of my network. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I was actually processing on an automatic replication, and Dropbox would certainly be one of those types of products. I recommend, as you know, a lot of Pogo plugs because of their automatic replication, or free softwares like SyncToy to do that automatic replication. So In my mind, it's kind of a disk-to-disk replication. And in this particular case, the disk doesn't necessarily have to be on the Internet like it would be with Dropbox. I'm actually pretty good if it's another local hard drive or one that's in an alternate site or perhaps, for many of our listeners, in the office and in their homes.
Yeah. I was just thinking about something that gave me easy access to it on the Internet, and just in case, I didn't remote into the office for whatever reason, that became a challenge.
Yeah, that's why I actually like to recommend the Pogo plug, because it's, for $129 retail, now street price is about $80. You can hook a USB drive up to that. Let's say you get a terabyte, and that's another $100. So for about $250, you actually have your own shareable local hard drive that you can get to across the Internet. Yet it duplicates all the software, and it's probably big enough for now for us to run these images.
Some pretty good solutions out there, but Dave, I think the solution is not continue to mail people CDs and thumb drives.
No, and I agree with that. The only thing that occurs to me as we're talking is that maybe if you're a road warrior, that you do need to carry a high-capacity SD card if you've got a reader for it, or a USB thumb drive that has an ISO of at least in the basic stuff.
Yeah.
That you can get back up and running and get back to your server over the Internet to get the rest of the stuff that you need overnight.
Well, and a recommendation we made on this recording probably 2 to 2.5 years ago was consider having an external USB drive that has a virtual machine on it. And so, in effect, an external USB hard drive today, military-grade USB 1 terabytes are running $84 roughly. And they aren't very large, so notice then you can plug that USB into just about any machine, fire up the virtual machine, and be back and functioning. So maybe that's still our best short-term answer, is a nice USB external hard drive.
So, Randy, I got to figure, one of the companies that mails out as much software as anybody today is Intuit, as far as people that still stick it in the mail or send it to one of the box stores like Staples. Does that come to an end in the near future, or do they just continue to perpetuate that business model?
I think it's got to come to an end in the future, and I think it will be one of those points where they finally look at their client base and realize their client base has moved on and that there is enough Internet access. And it's interesting that Intuit would take that position, because they were one of the first companies that required, Internet authorizations. So they started assuming people had Internet long before they did in my part of the country. And now that people have enough capacity, I think it would be an optional pay-for service to get the CD if you want it, much like most of the manufacturers like Dell and HP have done for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I guess there's a risk associated with that, where you feel like, gosh, people are so used to getting CDs, but, at some point, I guess you got to make that change.
Mm-hmm. And let's face it, I still have a lot of the media personally in my home, just because I don't want to chew up the limited Internet bandwidth that I have in my home for downloads. But, if we could start a series of downloads to pick up, 15 different updates overnight and just walk away, and when you came back in the morning, they're there. If the software's sophisticated enough that it restarts properly, that actually all can work out pretty well.
Well, so to our last topic today, guys, I want to talk just a little bit about the conferences. We just finished conference season for the most part, and so I know, Randy, at least you and I were on a lot of planes last few weeks. Dave, you went to different conferences than we did, so I imagine you were doing a lot of the same. But yep. One of the things that stuck out to me, Randy, at the CCH, Thompson, and Sleater conference is just this whole concept of mobile apps. I know at the Thompson conference, that was part of John Barron's keynote, as well as it was Mike Sabanis' keynote at the CCH conference. Any take on that?
Well, it is a big deal because, as you know, Darren, I think the Thompson mobile app for Practice CS has exceeded 2,500 downloads today.
Yeah.
And we have gone to the trouble of building a grid, because we couldn't figure out an easier way to do it, of 140 iPad applications, about 40 of which we think are valid business applications at this point. And so the concept of applications that are simpler to use, that solve a single business problem, I think that's an idea that's come of age. We talked about simplification of these applications, but a product that does one thing, does it very well, does it very easily, just seems to make a devil a lot of sense. In fact, let's pick an app that you've already named in this podcast today, Dropbox. What a simple app that can be used across cell phone, iPhone in your case, or an iPad, or the PC, and so forth, just like I named the Pogo Plug, which also has an iPhone, a Droid, a BlackBerry, an iPad app for its access as well as through a browser.
You know, what I'm seeing, guys, from this is that with some of these apps that are coming out to solve these single business processes, what they're doing is they're reaching back into your desktop, so to speak. And so just to kind of describe this, let's say that I have QuickBooks sitting on our server here in our office or on my desktop. It has the capability with Intuit's latest, I think they call it QuickBooks, QB Connect. It has the ability to reach into that app. So I think what's happening is there's a sync that's taking place between my desktop and some space at Intuit, and it's keeping some data synchronized out there so that my mobile device, my iPad, can reach into that data and stay in sync with the iPad and do a function like create an invoice on the road and put it back into QuickBooks desktop later on, or really essentially immediately. Are you seeing that, Randy?
Your description is exceptionally accurate, and one bit of discussion that you didn't get to see, Darren, was the concern for privacy over this, because the synchronization that's taking place, in some cases the users don't know what data is being synchronized, they don't know the level of confidential data synchronized, and the users are starting to worry about what's either in the cloud or that they've granted permission that could be data mined, for example, by a company. And so, yes, I'm definitely seeing this synchronization and remote access-like capability.
Dave, that's got to be making the hair on your neck stand up.
I think he might have
passed out on that one. Dave, do we still have you with us? He might have got disconnected and trying to get back in. But, Randy, I know that, Thompson, they're reaching into their Practice CS app sort of that same way now. CCH is definitely moving in this direction. In their apps, they just launched a really beautiful app to reach into some of their tax research.
Yes. And in fact, this whole reaching into it pushes the point again about how we secure those portable instruments. You start thinking about security breach laws. The beauty of having the data is extraordinary. I would encourage all of our listeners to try some of these apps where they make business sense to them, because what they enable is pretty phenomenal. And but at the same time, I'd also like for you to consider what happens if this device is lost. What happens if this device is broken? How do I make sure that the data is destroyed? How do I make sure that the data is wiped? How do I rebuild this appliance, when I get another replacement cell phone?
So, Randy, Dave got disconnected, but he's back in now. So, Dave, you can hear me now, right?
I know I've been arguing with Randy all for the last 5 minutes on every point he made, and nobody heard me.
Well, you're probably connected via the internet. That's what I'd guess.
We probably made you pass out when we were talking about some of the security of all this. So did you get a chance to hear most of what we were talking about?
Yes, I did, and let me reiterate what Randy has had to say, because in the coming year, privacy is going to be huge. In fact, the White House is talking about appointing a new privacy internet or online privacy czar to oversee it, and you've seen what happened with Facebook, which it turns out, you know, they were safeguarding everybody's personal information, but the third parties weren't. The third parties were taking it and selling it to the highest bidder. So you've not only got to be careful what your relationship is with your primary vendor, but all of their third parties as well. It's going to get very ugly, and people do need to take care what happens to their data when it starts getting passed around.
In fact, you know, your relationship there was sounding like a HIPAA. Relationship, you know, where you had to not only assure your own system, but all the third-party relationships. And you know what? You're absolutely right. A lot of these third-party relationships, they're not under the same constraints as the primary vendor.
Well, as you guys know, it doesn't take much to put an app on the App Store and for Apple. I mean, you could be working out of your basement and put an app up there, I suspect. But that doesn't necessarily mean it can reach into something. Unless you allow it to, but it puts a whole new meaning, I think, on this idea of being careful what you are downloading and what you are giving access to. You know, I can't remember what the name of the app is, but it's essentially a mobile app that takes care of, Randy, all my passwords on my iPhone, and also another app that I have that can allow you to download all your bank information. I don't know anything about these companies, and after I downloaded them, I'm thinking, oh, I don't know if I should have done that or not.
Mm-hmm. Very much a problem, because whether it's a Password Depot or a RoboForms or any of the other password type of keepers that are on your local instrument, I do worry very much about the upstream company. You know, they obviously have the technology to get into those password files. Is this a good place to keep them or not?
Yeah. Page One, is that the one, the travel sort of? No, that's my finance app that kind of gives me, you know, kind of gathers all my data from all my cards and bank accounts, that sort of thing. And then MSecure was the other iPhone app that keeps, you know, sort of a password keeper. But again, it gets back to the whole same thing, Dave, that we were just talking about, is this whole security thing and who you're giving all this information to.
And Darren, you made the point, you can sit in your basement and write a mobile app. So who's looking at what these apps do? Who's looking at what extra code may have been put in an app so that you think you're playing a game online while it's busy sending all of your, you know, password and financial data to a server somewhere in Russia?
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty scary when you start thinking about it. But, you know, these things are so cool that it's hard to help yourself.
I agree.
In fact, I'm just trying to think of a new word. Maybe we'll coin that. But, you know, you think about the addiction that people have to their Blackberries, Crackberry. You know, you start thinking about apps and the addiction to the apps, because many of them are exceptionally cool apps, as you say, that do some wonderful tasks. It is a stated concern of the open source platforms like Droid, because the Droid marketplace does not have near the vetting that the iPhone marketplace has or that the RIM marketplace has. And so, you know, this vetting of the applications, you know, Dave, you're absolutely right. You could be running an app that's doing something wonderful. In the meantime, it's snagging, you know, user ID and password traffic off your phone and sending it somewhere else.
Well, we certainly saw that happen with computers. It's not like this is a new threat. So
yeah.
I think it's only a matter of time before it's all over your tablet PC and your iPad and your iPod and your BlackBerry. So, yeah, it's a problem.
Yeah, it seems to be. Well, Randy, other takeaways, I mean, I thought CCH's conference was outstanding this year. I thought Thompson's was outstanding, as was Sleater's. They were all very, very well attended, some of the biggest audiences at all three of them that they've had.
Yes, in fact, all three, I think, reported record attendance. And, in fact, I sent a thank you note to CCH today that I was very impressed with the professionalism and just the content and many other things that happened related to their event. Would encourage our listeners, if they've not budgeted to in the future, consider attending the CCH or the Thompson conferences or Sleater's conference if it's in their respective practice areas. I think they'll learn a significant amount. They'll be able to network with others of their peers from around the country. And besides just getting a lot of concentrated knowledge in just a short period of time from the publisher or from notable thought leaders in the market space.
And if I were going to add one thing to that, it's if you were going to look for one sign that we may be starting to edge out of this economic doldrum, it is that across the board, the conferences I've attended are seeing a noticeable pickup over last year, which means people have some money to spend anyway.
Well, I don't know about you guys, but the airplanes I'm on are full.
All the time, 100%.
Yeah, they're always overbooked. They're always trying to get people to give up their seats. Now, I mean, that could be because they've certainly cut their routes, but there are definitely people in the airports and they're traveling. So, well, gentlemen, thanks for your time today. We're out of time. Really appreciate it. Great discussion. Any closing thoughts, guys?
Well, as our listeners kind of prepare into 2011, We want them to watch, for security issues that will be increasing. We think there'll be regulation changes around that. I do think our applications will continue to get easier. We will be watching out for you with things like the CES show that comes up in January and other new publisher announcements. But we would ask for any feedback. If you have particular topics you want us to talk about or things to watch out for, do let us know.
Yep. Dave, how about yourself?
I just want to say happy holidays to everybody because certainly it's time for us to start looking toward the end of the year.
Absolutely. Well, gentlemen, thanks so much for your time and look forward to talking to you next month.
The CPA Technology Advisors Intersection Live podcast series is brought to you by ADP Small Business Services, supporting the accountant community. For more information about the CPA Technology Advisors' other podcast programs, webcasts, and our e-newsletter, visit cpatechnologyadvisor.com. To ask questions or leave comments about our podcasts, call 800-456-0864, extension 2106, or tune in to future episodes where you're able to ask questions live via talkshoe.com.